Trending Topics.
Welcome back, everybody, to our podcast about all things mental health and how they intersect with codependency.
Woohoo! I'm Brooke.
Brooke on the horn and Megan
on the laugh.
On the laugh over here.
Yeah. We started off Lisa's interview, or I did, with a... And naturally, that's how I want to start every interview now.
Yeah. So. I mean, when we just thought, what a good idea. Why haven't we been doing that? That's how it's going to be from now on, people. Buckle up. Brooke did say she wanted to get an actual horn, and I feel like might be a little bit loud. But you guys weigh in. Let us know. Tell us on Instagram or at our email if you would like to an actual horn at the beginning of every episode ushering us in.
Yes. Or I said even a gong might be...
appropriate.
Yeah. I just want some sort of, this is the beginning.
Like, and the theme song's not good enough.
We need more music added in there. And also just like anytime someone makes a good point, I'd love to have just a horn that just like, good point, Lisa. And just like, go
just
for it.
Just blast our listeners' eardrums to smithereens every time. They are going to love that.
They're so going to love that. I mean, I already blasted them on the first episode of the season when my phone went off and we didn't know how to edit that out. So at this point, I think our listeners are used to getting their ears blasted out either by my phone ringtone or by, you know, whatever we want to add in.
Yeah. Good luck. Well, today we're recapping our interview with Lisa. She is, I think it's perennial_therapy on Instagram. All of her info will be in the show notes. And if you haven't listened to that interview, go back to the last episode, listen to that, and then come on back to us.
Yes, it was awesome. She is killing it in her field. Mm-hmm. Her specialty is with the BIPOC community and adult children of immigrants.
Yeah.
So it was really fascinating. We wanted to get a different perspective on boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We wanted to create space. I mean, we want to be sensitive about this and just be clear. Brooke and I are not in the we're not Black Indigenous people of color. We're not adult children of immigrants, but we want to create a safe space for everyone on this podcast. And we want experts from, you know, all niches to be able to talk about how that lens affects mental health, boundaries, all this stuff we're talking about.
Right. And I think there's a lot of terms that get thrown around, especially on social media or just in the mental health world, where we don't fully understand what they mean.
Yeah.
And so BIPOC has, I mean, obviously the acronym speaks for itself, but it's something that I've always wanted to dive deeper into and just understand that lens,
your
that perspective.
Experience.
Yeah. So we learned a ton on this one. We really
Lisa's
did.
Lisa's awesome. So nice. Generous with her time. I mean, every single guest I'm just floored by. But she talked a lot about, I think a lot of, honestly, if I were to try to find like a motif, a theme, a lot of what we were talking about was like belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Like how BIPOC and children of immigrants, these communities struggle to feel belonging because they are typically immediately judged and can't find a lot of commonalities right away.
Yeah.
So then they end up having to, and she said, constantly negotiate their sense of self.
Yeah.
To fit in, to try to belong.
Which is so interesting and I mean, sad at the same time. But they, and especially I'd imagine with someone who's interracial, that feeling of belonging is always going to not feel that way. They're not going to feel like they belong anywhere because they're not white enough. They're not Black enough. They're not Asian enough. They're not whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's what she was saying. Yeah. The enough. Am I this enough?
Yeah. And what's interesting is, and this is just my own personal tidbit on this, but like, this also exists in the LGBTQIA plus community as well, because it's like, and especially I've heard this from men's perspective where it's like, you're too straight acting to be gay. You're too gay acting to be in this
bi category. Or whatever.
Or you're, yeah, exactly. Like bisexual men and whatnot and women. So it's just interesting to think about those intersectionalities as well and just how those relate. But anyways, back to what we were talking about with BIPOC. It's the sense of belonging, I'm sure, is really difficult in that way where it's like, even if you're not interracial and you're just not the quote unquote norm, which is insane that that's even a thing, but it's like, that must be really difficult. The societal pressure to mold into the white perspective, the white lens is crushing, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know? And she was saying the idea is like, you know, you're the dominant culture sets the tone. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't fit into that dominant culture, that's when a lot of these things come up. Right. And she started off talking about code switching, which I'm sure everybody's heard by now. I feel like we're talking about that a lot. Right. I mean, I see it a lot on Instagram and everything. And, people's experience with that, how hurtful it can be because they're having to deny certain parts of themselves and, you know, cover that up with something that's acceptable in the moment to the dominant culture.
Yeah. Have you seen the show Insecure that was on HBO?
Okay. No, I don't think so.
That show, I love that show. Mm-hmm. It's with Issa Rae. She's the main character.
Oh, yeah, I love her.
Yeah, and it just follows her life and her daily struggles. And one of the storylines in that is her best friend who works in corporate America as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And this new woman of color gets hired to at this same law firm. Mm-hmm. And she notices that this woman is talking, and she's not code switching. Mm-hmm. So code switching essentially is changing up the way you speak in a white audience or in a white corporate America, right? So it's like, you know, the way you would speak to a fellow black person, you wouldn't speak that way in corporate America. You have to kind of tighten it up and button it up. And
hide it.
So this woman who just got hired at the firm is not hiding the fact that she, her culture and how she speaks and everything. And so the main character in this, or like the best friend who's, or yeah, the main character who's working at the law firm, she kind of like pulls her aside and it's like, hey, she didn't use the word code switching, but she basically was like, you need to, you know, not be that way. Okay. Mm. And the girl was kind of like offended by hearing it that. And so, but then the next like scene, it shows that the white corporate heads at this company end up pulling her aside in a conference room, and she can see that she's being talked to about like, hey, you might just like not be fitting in with her culture here. And yeah. And so of course this is a fictional story or a fictional show, but it's depicting real life struggles for all people of color, where it's like the fact that we are having conversations where it's like, you're not fitting into the company culture here. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the company culture? Mm-hmm. It's white.
Whiteness.
Exactly. So I don't know. That show, by the way, is excellent. I love it in so many levels.
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah. But anyways.
Yeah. It is really ridiculous. And then I had asked Lisa in this interview, I was like, do you think, I mean, we talked about how you see this a lot in professionalism, like what is professional in the corporate culture.
Yeah.
Oftentimes this is a main area where people have to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, because certain ways of speaking, ways of dressing, you know, hairstyles, I asked her, is it because those things are immediately being judged as something negative, and associated with some like part of life that the dominant culture is, one, not used to, but also immediately judges as something negative or malicious, or, you know, they just have all their preconceived notions about those things. So it couldn't possibly be professional.
Right.
And she was saying, yes, that's, well, I don't think she didn't just say yes.
She just said yes, and that's it.
And then the interview was over.
Yeah.
But she was saying that that is a part of it, is that the dominant culture decides what's good, bad, malicious, professional. And then because specifically white people have deemed all of these other, like, ways of being as lesser than, essentially, you can't bring that into their space.
Right. And she mentions how certain cultures, it's more, the way that they communicate is more direct. Whereas in a corporate setting, it's like, well, you know, you have to be...
beat around the bush.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be careful in certain rooms with certain execs, and you can't just be direct with what needs to be discussed. And so, yeah, she discusses those differences. And then, you know, someone who's white might look at that and say, well, that's just not professional. That person isn't accustomed to professional environments, which is not the case.
The case, You're equating two things that are not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really such a shame. And I just, it's a big thing to tackle. But, and then I guess that's my question. It's like, I guess the only way to tackle it, because it's like whatever the dominant culture is, in this case, whiteness, that sets the tone. So it's like, okay, then we want to change. It's like, do we want to change the fact that there is a dominant culture? Do we want to change? Are we trying to break down that hierarchy? Are we trying to, because, you know, if there are more, I don't know, it's just like, what's the solution? Do you know what I mean? Like, where are we, how do we stop this?
Yeah. Well, I think because I'm doing a business degree right now. I'm back in school. So I'm, as you know, I'm taking classes for a bachelor's in business and marketing right now. And there's been a lot of classes regarding diversity and inclusion in the business setting. And I think that solution is that we need, and I could be wrong on this, but this is what I'm gathering, is we just need more people, more diverse people in leadership roles at these companies to set the culture. Set the tone.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So I think that we need to move more in this direction where women of color, people of color, and more just diverse people in general need to be. Because a company culture comes from the top, right? A company culture isn't developed by the employees themselves. It's set from a standard at the very top, right?
Yeah.
So if the top is just a bunch of white men,
Yeah.
Of course, that's going to become the company culture because the rest of the company follows suit.
Yes.
So it's the same way that parents set examples for their children in the corporate setting. It's like, those leaders are setting examples for the rest of the employees and how that company's going to operate.
Right? That totally makes sense. Because sometimes I get into this headspace where I'm like, how, like, it's too big of a problem. Do you know what I mean? I get so overwhelmed. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, how do we cut this out?
Yeah. It's crazy.
And I think of, like, companies as not people, almost. Do you know what I mean? Where I'm like, how do we change a company? How do we change a dominant culture? And it's like, no, it is the top people that set the culture.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when you think of culture, it's hard to I don't think a lot of us think that it comes from the top. For some reason, we just think that it's just like whatever's happening on our level, right? But I'm learning through my business classes that that's not the case. And actually, company culture comes directly from the top.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, so, my gosh.
That was a really interesting point that she made when it came to that.
Yeah.
But
another thing she said that I think is an important topic for us is that adult children of immigrants often struggle with, like, their parents feeling like you don't have time for mental health.
Yes.
Like, mental health isn't a priority.
Correct. Yeah. And that's so unfortunate.
Dangerous, right?
Dangerous, yeah. And I think that it's completely a generational gap as well of, like, you know, of course they had to work their asses off to get into America and to establish the lives that they did, the parents, right? But as the children of immigrants who are now settled in this new country, there needs to be an understanding of prioritizing your mental health and not burning yourself out with working a bunch of hours, you know? And we had mentioned, I mean, I mentioned that TikTok that kind of makes fun of that, of like, that's how it is talking to my immigrant dad, where he's like, oh, you're relaxing? No time for relax, you know? And it's like, that's insane.
And it's like, honoring the fact that it is a privilege to have that time. It is a privilege to be able to even think about stuff like this. That's true. But it doesn't make it less important. It doesn't mean that it's superfluous. It doesn't mean that it's useless. It doesn't mean that it's silly.
Right.
Just because it is a privilege. You want to hold that in your hand and be grateful for that privilege, but at the same time recognize that it is something to prioritize.
That's a really good point, right? Yeah, because it is a privilege for the second generation, so to speak, or third, to be able to relax. But as parents of those, of their children, they need to realize that their kids come with entirely new set of circumstances in life that didn't apply to them, right?
Right.
It's a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And so those experiences need to be honored. We also talked about just self-care in general and how difficult it can be to just get in a bathtub and release all your thoughts.
Actually relax.
Yeah. You know, and you had mentioned too, it's like even when I'm relaxing, I'm still...
My mind's not relaxing, you know. And then she started talking about mind-body connection and like how that really is the key to it, because you want to... The reason you want to prioritize mental health is and self-care is because our body is directly linked to our mind, to our emotions. You know, they are fully connected. So taking care of one is taking care of the other.
Exactly. And I think I had mentioned on a previous podcast, but Dr. Joe Dispenza has a lot of books on this mind-body connection type thing. And there's a lot of other like self-help people out there who talk about this. I hate calling it self-help, really, but the category of just personal development, when you look into books like that, there's so many people who are well renowned, who have major degrees, who know what they're talking about, who are now confirming for everyone that our thoughts and our mind dictate our bodies in so many ways. We store it as energy in certain pockets of our body. That's why people kind of laugh at or label chakra work as woo-woo, but like chakra work and finding out where you're storing things, where the trauma is being stored, where you're blocked, learning all those centers of the body and being like, okay, there's a block here. There's a bunch of people you can look into for this, by the way, if you're curious about chakra work and healing. There's energy healers. There's a lot of people who will look as to or help you unblock these blocked energies in certain zones of your body. But getting back to what we're talking about, it's like a poison. Trauma can be like a poison, and it can leak into parts of our body and just stay there and actually manifest diseases. It's been now it's been scientifically proven that disease can come from traumas and from anything that gets stored in the body, right?
And like creating that stress day in and day out, I think we do that with our thoughts that are not monitored, you know, like we're negative self-talk, or she said like you're shoulding, don't should all over yourself. I should be doing this. I should be doing that.
Yeah.
It takes you away from the current state. It takes you away from here and now. It takes you away from your purpose and from peace, because you're in the future. You're in the past. I wish I hadn't done that. I should be doing something else instead of just being where you're at. So like clearing your body's tension and then allowing yourself to be meditatively at peace in the moment. Those are practices that we need to work on every single day. It's not going to come naturally, especially with the pressures of the world and the other things we have to prioritize that are actively fighting against it and making you stressed. But that's, I think, the point, is that in order to not allow those things to take over our body, we have to practice releasing them.
Exactly.
Right?
And that has to be a practice that you implement in your life. You know, we had talked about in our previous episode that with ADHDJ when we were doing that recap, I was talking about how it's hard for me to develop a routine.
Yeah.
If there's one routine, we should try our best, even if it's like 15 minutes a day. If you're a really busy person, get up just slightly earlier, or maybe just find that pocket on your lunch break of 15 minutes to just do some deep breathing exercise, release all the tension in your body, right? Because our bodies just store tension in our shoulders and our necks, and we just end up being this person that's stiff when we really could just be doing some breathing and some self-care, even for 15 minutes, to just try and release all that out of our bodies. I know I'm working on this, but it's, I have not implemented a routine yet, but I want to do this, you know?
It's really shocking how much better I feel after doing deep breathing.
Yeah.
Or just taking a deep breath, not even like doing 15 minutes of it. Like if I'm at work and I'm really stressed and I just take a big breath, I'm like immediately I feel so much better.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Nuts. Yeah. And I do find that I am like shallow breathing, or like I stop breathing throughout the day, like I hold my breath, you know?
Yeah.
And you just have to be aware of how is your stress making you use your body inefficiently? Mm-hmm. You know, in a way that's restricting you of oxygen, you know, these right. things are going to be affecting how you're thinking, your emotions, and then, of course, how your body's functioning.
Right. And if you're like an adult child of an immigrant family, you might struggle with just not thinking that that is necessary, or just even struggling with giving yourself that time. So yeah. I think she had really highlighted that as like that could definitely be a struggle. And
for those communities.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was saying, too, because we asked about boundaries.
Yes.
And she was saying that specifically in these communities, it's difficult for people to set boundaries with their parents, especially immigrant parents, because there's a sense of, like, they went through so much, I have no right to X. I don't have a right to have a voice or have feelings or have opinions or, you know, ask for anything from them or ask for them to, you know, I, you know, have my own boundaries.
Yeah.
And how difficult it is to set them. And I think that that totally makes sense. And then she said that's a big reason why there's a lot of guilt and shame in these communities as well.
Right.
Which, of course, makes you kind of retreat into that low self-esteem, no boundaries place. So it's kind of, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I can definitely see that being a struggle with, it's so difficult to tell your immigrant parents, like, no, or just, I mean, no is a complete sentence, right?
Right.
We've learned that many times over. So it's like, it's hard. And when you have those cultural pressures to fit the mold for your parents, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, that is just truly difficult. She also discussed just the differences between what boundaries are and what they aren't.
Really important.
I felt like that was a good refresher, just not only just for the BIPOC community, but for everyone. Mm-hmm. Because I think we had mentioned in our first boundaries episode on season one where, like, Jonah Hill... there was that whole situation that came out in the public about him, like, sending these insanely controlling text messages.
Yeah.
So she just went over that aspect again of, you know, that boundaries are not a way to control another human being. Mm-hmm. They're only what you are in control of. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if your boundary is there's not going to be any yelling in our fights in this relationship, then your boundary is to walk away when that, if that does happen. But your boundary is not... tell this person to stop yelling.
Yeah.
It's, I'm going, just letting you know, I'm going to leave the room every time we get into a yelling match, because that's not going to work for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that release of control, because I'll say, and I said this to Lisa, and she was really nice to me about it, but I will say a boundary that sounds good. Like, I'm going to have to do this if you keep doing that. Okay, that sounds good. That's about me, right? That's appropriate. But in my heart, I'm saying that because I want them to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that to try to get them to stop it. Because it's almost a test. Like, do you care about me enough to actually stop this thing? I'm telling you I don't like it. And I'm going to leave. Do you care enough that I'm going to leave?
Yeah.
You know, and then if they don't respond in a way that shows me that, it's almost like now I get into this guilt, low self-esteem thing because I'm like, they don't care about me.
Yeah, and that's so funny you mentioned that because I actually didn't say on that episode that I 1,000% relate to this, but I'm saying it now.
Yeah.
I 1,000% relate to that because when I set a boundary, I want you to completely cut out that behavior for me. And I feel entitled to do so. And that's what's funny is like if I'm being completely honest with myself, which is hard to do.
I know.
Honestly, I feel entitled to it. I feel like I have a right to tell you that that behavior is no longer acceptable. Therefore, it should be completely stopped.
Because it's hurting me and I feel out of control when you're doing that. I don't want to feel this way.
Yeah.
And I want you to care about me enough to stop it.
Right, right. Instead of giving them the benefit of the doubt that they are human and also like they are their own person. And
yeah. And I'm jumping to this assumption and conclusion that they don't care about me.
Exactly.
You know, and then I just, I'm not using them correctly. But then when we were talking about that, how hard these boundary things are, she was like, yeah, but that's why it's a practice because nobody masters it. It's always hard, you know, and you always will feel a little guilty. And it just made me feel better. I was like, okay, I might be doing it right and feel guilty and it's still hard and that's okay. I'm not looking for it to be totally easy and no problem and guilt-free because it never will feel like that.
I actually am so glad she made that point because I think we all judge our emotions when they come in, right? It's like, I shouldn't be. It's the should game again.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, it's, I do that constantly. Like I'm always feeling guilty when I set a boundary. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge that that's there, but not identify with it. Like we had talked about with her. So
yeah, like it just is. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's not who you are. It's, you know.
Yes. I've been going through just this thought process recently of like letting things go, being able to let things go.
Yeah.
And it's not going well. but like letting things go, it is what it is. And just how that will give you so much peace.
Yeah.
If that's your perspective. Mm-hmm. And it just is so foreign to me.
Detaching
because of this codependent mindset of like, if you tell me you care about me, if we have some sort of relationship, if anything changes or if you do anything to tell me otherwise, I'm immediately going to assume that that's not true. It was never true. And it's the world is ending.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like things change. People leave. People pass away. People leave you. People like you have to be able to say it is what it is and let go in life because life is change. And it's so freaking hard.
Oh my God. That is the hardest thing for me. It really is to detach from people, situations, outcomes, expecting that things are always going to stay the same is a farce. I mean, is that the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not letting it affect how you see yourself. Like that's what I do where I'm like, oh, I must be the worst and not worth anything.
Yeah.
And, you know,
the way I'm starting to kind of reframe it is we're all just souls living our journeys. And I think once that journey is up, it's up. And it has nothing to do with us. It has maybe, I don't know, a grander thing at play. I don't know. But maybe there's just a reason, a season, and a lifetime for certain people to be in our lives. And that's a saying that I've always loved to hear. Is that I've heard that years ago and it stuck with me. It's like, maybe this person was in your life for a reason. Or a season, or possibly a lifetime. But we don't have any control over that, and we have to let go of that. So, yeah, I completely relate to you on that, and that's the struggle of life.
My stomach's turning just listening to you talk. Like, it's very upsetting to me.
Oh. At the end of the day, we're all just walking each other back home.
Well,
yeah, no. I don't know. It's a more deeper philosophical way of looking at it, but it's like home being death, by the way.
Was that the time to use the horn?
After something so deep and serious. Imagine us using the horn like on these really serious like interviews with people, and it's like, and then, you know, this terrible thing happened in my life, and we're just like, bah, 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 bah.
Sorry, did we not mention we're going to use the horn?
So sorry.
Well, Brooke, I feel like we learned a lot and we're better people after talking to Lisa, and we have a lot to work on.
Yeah, we're works in progress, yo.
Every day. But we do have one more question.
Do you like us?
Bye.